Hi, everybody. It's Loretta. Welcome back to An Emo Girl's Guide to the Galaxy. This is a safe space for readers, weebs, emos, and everyone in between. So if you love sarcasm and hate the patriarchy, you've come to the right place.
Hey, everyone. It's Devin. We have a special episode today. We're interviewing Claire LeGrand. She is a fantasy writer. She wrote the Furyborn series. She has a new adult series out. She also has written Saltkill Girls and Extasia. I know she has some middle grade books out. I forget the title, but I am going to hand it over to Claire to give a little intro about her and the types of characters and books she likes to write.
Well, first of all, Loretta, Dev, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I've been looking forward to this for weeks. I'm so excited.
Us too.
I know. So, hi, everyone. I'm Claire LeGrand, and I am the author of 12 books so far, with more on the way. What books have I written? I'm like, my mind suddenly was like, my name is Claire. I write books. My latest book is A Crown of Ivy and Glass, which is the first book in the adult romantic fantasy series, the Middlemist Trilogy. I'm probably best known for the Imperium Trilogy, which is a young adult epic fantasy series consisting of Furyborn, Kingsbane, and Lightbringer. As you already said, I also write horror. I love horror. So I have a couple of YA horror books, Saltkill Girls, Extasia, and then I have middle grade books as well, The Cavendish Home for Boys and Girls, The Year of Shadows, Some Kind of Happiness, Foxheart, Thornlight, and then I also have a young adult Nutcracker retelling called Winterspell. So books are kind of all over the place, but they all involve magic and complex, complicated girls and sometimes dark magic and sometimes nice magic and sometimes really charismatic, magnetic villains, and sometimes our complicated, complex girls are kind of unlikable. I feel like no matter what the genre is or the style I'm writing in, those are the through lines: magic of some kind and complicated girls, or women. I'm writing adult now. So that's a little about me, and I'm so excited to talk more about wow. I am so excited to talk more about my work with y'all today. So
yes, it's funny that you mentioned the complicated characters, because when Loretta started reading Furyborn, she was like, I'm not going to lie, I don't think I like this girl.
Wait, which one were you talking about though?
Riel.
Oh. Fair. Yeah. She's a lot. She goes through it.
Yeah. I love it, though, because I feel like with any of your books that I've read, you go on, like, a journey with them. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I just love it because it reflects life.
Yeah, I think so, too. I like writing stories about characters who are kind of a hot mess. And they don't always become unmessy. They just become less messy. And they're learning. And even the adult characters that I write, because I don't know about you, but I didn't magically have my stuff together the minute I turned 18. So
yeah, absolutely not.
You know, we're all still figuring it out over the course of our lives. We should always be learning and evolving as people and learning more about ourselves, learning more about the world. And so you're not always gonna like my characters, but you're not always gonna like people either, especially before you get to know them, right? My hope is that once you go through the journey with these characters in my books, you may not want to be their best friend. Some of them you may want to, some of them you may not want to, but you understand them and you understand the journey they've gone through and you see how they have grown. And maybe in reading their story, you've been able to reflect a little bit on yourself and think about
absolutely
some things about yourself and ask yourself questions. What would I do in Riel's position? You know, if I had this like hot evil angel speaking in my ear, what would I do?
Yeah.
I really like writing those kind of thorny, prickly, uncomfortable characters that don't always do the right thing. I think it's just such a rewarding journey to go on them, to go with them on these story journeys and to see their evolution, you know?
Yeah, that was actually one of my main questions, too, that we have written down in our, like, little notes section, mm-hmm. is that you always incorporate those, like, realistic mental health issues mm-hmm. in your characters, or even, like, some of your characters have disabilities, but that doesn't stop them from still being, like, girl bosses. It doesn't stop them from, like, saving the world or mm-hmm. from getting to point X to Y. Like, how... Why do you feel like it's important to write those characters? And what is it like, what journey do you take as an author of, like, having to be in that mental space of this character is not okay right now, or she's really struggling with, like, being in constant pain? Because mm-hmm. I know that's what Gemma goes through in her journey of, like, I have to suck this up because I can't let anybody know I'm weak, or yeah. I have to, like, overcompensate for this because people look down upon me or think I'm less than. Like, what is it like on you and how you're reflecting in your writing?
That's a great question. I mean, writing is great, right? Because you get to write stories and share them with people and connect with other people. But pause. Is this, am I allowed to curse? Is this a kid?
Yes,
okay.
First of all, everyone.
I was like, I should have asked about this beforehand, but it just popped into my head. So
we get that question often, okay. So it's okay.
So writing books is great. You get to share your stories and connect with people. One of my favorite things is to connect with readers from all over, right? And learn their stories and share my stories with them. But also, writing is a fundamentally selfish activity, because through your stories you get to kind of work out your shit. And so I live with anxiety and depression, and I have for years. I didn't know what it was when I was a kid, and that's what one of my books is about, Some Kind of Happiness. It's a middle grade book about an 11-year-old girl who lives with undiagnosed anxiety and depression, and she basically figures out that it's okay to ask for help over the course of her story. There's no quick fix, because there's no quick fix or easy fix, or even necessarily a fix in the traditional sense of the word when it comes to mental health, right? You just figure out how to manage your challenges in whatever way works best for you. And that strategy is constantly evolving. If only it were as easy as, like, okay, I know how I'm going to deal with my anxiety and depression or whatever your mental health challenge is, and you snap your fingers and then that's all you have to do for the rest of your life. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So from a personal and kind of selfish perspective, I really like writing stories about characters who are dealing with these kinds of challenges, and yet they still get to be the hero, and they still get to fall in love and save the day, and in Gemma's case, wear really fabulous dresses and attend amazing parties and have amazing relationships with her friends and with her sisters, complicated relationships, but still rich and real. And just because she lives with anxiety and lives with chronic pain doesn't mean that she doesn't get to do all of those things. Those challenges that she lives with, they don't define her. They're just a part of her. And I think when I was growing up, especially, but even when I was a 20-something, I'm well into my 30s now, it would have been life-changing for me to read these big, sweeping, magical fantasy stories, which has always been my favorite genre, that feature characters like Gemma, who are difficult and dealing with a lot of pain and going through a lot of mental gymnastics every day to present a version of herself to the world that she feels is palatable. Seeing a character like that front and center, and reading a book in which their experiences are not dismissed and are treated with respect and compassion, and also they get to go on fantasy adventures and do magic and fall in love, I mean, that would have meant the world to me. And it still does mean the world to me when I encounter a book where the character is going through something like that and is dealing with things that are challenging and difficult, like I deal with and like many of my friends and family members deal with in real life, but they still get to be the hero. You know, mentally ill babes deserve happy endings too.
And that's right.
And I just loved writing this sparkling, lush fantasy story with a happily ever after, because a happily for now, you know, it is one of my books, so things aren't really neatly tied up until the end of book 3 for everybody, but it's not going to be Some of my other books are a little more tragic. You know, this is a romance. These books are romances, so everyone's going to end up okay. Yep. And so being able to...
You're going to hurt, but you're going to like it.
Right, exactly.
It'll explain Claire books.
Exactly. You're going to hurt a little less with these than perhaps you did with the Imperium trilogy. I'll just say that. So being able to do that and knowing that not only am I writing this book for people out there who may need a story like that, that features a character like Gemma, who has anxiety, who has chronic pain, who doesn't always like herself very much, who isn't always very likable, and is constantly thinking, I don't like myself. I kind of hate myself. She's thinking self-destructive thoughts. She's not kind to herself. And she learns gradually over the course of the book to be kinder to herself and to recognize her strengths for what they are. I mean, that's huge. Not only am I writing that kind of a story and that kind of a character for my readers, but I'm also writing that for me, especially for younger me, who really, you know, needed those kinds of stories more than she got growing up. Because let's face it, I mean, these are adult books, but I don't know about you. When I was a kid, I always read up. You know, I always read adult books. Yeah. So I know that there are going to be younger people reading these books as well as my adult readers. And so I'm constantly thinking of that reader, regardless of how old they are, that reader who needs to see that fantasy heroine kicking butt, but also being really anxious. And there's no quick magical fix for her. That was a really long answer to your question, but
no, it's I love it though.
But that philosophy is what I'm constantly thinking about when I write. Even if the character isn't dealing explicitly with what Gemma calls the panic, which is anxiety, even if the words aren't explicit on the page, a lot of my characters are dealing with various challenging emotions and, I don't remember where I was going with this comment. That's what I was going to say. I'm always thinking about that with my books, even if it's not explicit. Like, I'm thinking about writing for the Claire who needed this. That's like one of my guiding lights, because you can't write a book that's going to please everybody, right? So all I can do is write for the Claire who needed this and for the other readers out there who need this kind of story. And that's what I keep focused on. Yeah.
I love that answer so much. And even as somebody who is also I'm into my 30s. I feel like my inner child is so like, wow, I also needed this. Like, I understand what they're going to. There's a specific scene in Fury Born. I think it's the first book where she, Riel is laying out in bed and she's like, I just want to lay out and eat cake. Like, I'm on my period. She doesn't say it like that. She's like, I'm bleeding. It's like, I don't have the effort to go out there and like win this thing. I just want to be a slob. And I'm like, yes, even
relatable
in a world with magic. Yes. Girls just get it. Like, this is what we need. And I love those scenes so much. And I relate so much to when those characters are just like breaking down and they're like, I just need a minute. Can you just give me that? I'll save the world tomorrow.
Yeah, right now I need some cake. And God love him, Audric is really good about taking care of her in those moments. But yeah, I think, you know, not only for, like, in the case of Riel, like, dealing with her period, right? And I think there's also a scene in, I can't remember if it's Furyborn or Kingsbane, Eliana is dealing with her period, and Simon's like, he says something to the effect of, like, oh, it's unfair that you have to deal with this. And I can't remember exactly the conversation that they have, but they're discussing, like, her discomfort, pretty frankly. And so in that specific case, not only is it for people who experience periods, like, not only is it nice for them to be seen, but also, like, people who don't experience periods can read that and be like, oh, like, it's just a moment of sort of making you remember, oh, yeah, this is a thing that people in the world deal with, even in fantasy novels. And so it's just, it's just nice to be reminded of that and to be reminded that these are people and they have bodies and that's fine. Sometimes bodies suck and, you know, we're going to talk about it and you're going to feel it physically. And hopefully you have people who can help you with it, and then you move on. I just think having those moments especially in a fantasy novel, can help ground you in the things that the characters are feeling and in their story. And again, I never read books that talked explicitly about those things when I was young. And so I hope that it helps some of those younger readers, especially who are figuring out what the heck is going on with my body. And then they read this fantasy story and like, wow, Riel is so cool. And she also has periods that suck, you know, like that's just those little glimmers of being seen and feeling like you understand what that character is going through, even with things that aren't part of the direct story. I think that's so important.
Yeah, I think that that's amazing. Like I said, I relate. Loretta, I know, I feel like you relate too.
Absolutely. I never got those stories growing up either. And I love that answer too about, you know, for the people who don't have periods, it's a way for them to connect in a new way with people who do.
Right.
And I love that.
Because that's what stories are, right? It's a way of learning about different kinds of stories, different kinds of people, growing empathy for people who maybe don't experience the same things that you do, but wow, there are people just like you, and let's read all different kinds of stories and let's learn about all different kinds of people and experiences. And even if it's just a little passing moment of something in a much larger book, I mean, that can impact someone in ways that you can never predict. So I'm glad that you liked that moment.
It's also one of my favorite things about your writing is that you call them little moments, but I feel like they just hit harder when they're little moments because it's in so much more impactful. Like, you're reading this huge world, like it's this fantasy world where people have magic and there's wars, and then you just get to this little moment in time where they're talking about something so small, but you remember them because you're like, wait, it just seems so out of place, but it's not because it's normal. So you're like, oh yeah, this is so cool. Like, you're fitting in a period, or you're fitting in somebody having like a panic attack, and then she just gets up and she's like, okay, like that's, we did that, and now we're going to,
it adds a depth of character too.
Yeah, and it's just, I just, you relate to the characters a lot more that way, I feel like, instead of trying to focus only on the fantasy of it all and the magic of it all, and you focus on the characters and their personalities.
Thank you. That means a lot. And yeah, that's something that I'm always thinking about, because I pretty much only write stories that have a magical element. Even Some Kind of Happiness, which is mostly realistic fiction, there is sort of a parallel fantastical storyline that goes along with the realistic storyline. It's made up by the main character, but it doesn't make it any less real. And so I write books with magic, but I'm always thinking about, okay, this is a book about a magical world, but, or a magical part of the world. But first and foremost, it's about characters and it's about their relationships. How can I make sure that I keep my reader grounded in that heart of the story and these characters and their problems? And that's one of the ways I like to do that.
Yeah. Outside of building your characters around the things that you needed when you were younger and focusing on those, like normalizing the things that some people might not find as normal, what other places do you look for inspiration for your stories? Like, are there movies or shows or other books that are close to your heart that just like really resonated with you, that you're like, wow, I really love this world, like how can I just like make my own version? Or like, do you just listen to a song and you're like, oh yeah, I listened to this song and then I had a daydream and that's how I came about this story? Like, what's your story, what's your inspiration?
Well, it's kind of a mix of things, depends on the project. I do listen to a lot of music. So I used to be a trumpet player, and that's what I went to school for. Like, I wanted to play in an orchestra someday. And
oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. It was really fun. I miss it. I don't miss the hours of practicing every day. But but I do miss like the community of musicians and making music with other people. That's something I really miss. And so maybe someday I'll get back into some sort of community group or something. Anyway, so I love music. Music has always been a huge part of my life. And I do get a lot of inspiration from music, mostly instrumental music. Film scores are a huge source of inspiration for me. I remember when I was like in seventh grade and I was really getting into my trumpet playing, and I would sit on the floor of my living room and listen to the score for Titanic by James Horner.
Oh my god.
Yeah. That's and the best.
There's this one track called Hard to Starboard. It's when the ship hits the iceberg. And there's really cool trumpet parts in it. And I would just sit there with like my ear next to the speaker and just like rewind over and over and like listen to the, and I'd be like, ooh, yeah, I'd listen to their articulation and their tone. And like, I could tell when one trumpet player switched off to the other trumpet player because they were like taking turns in this really long sequence. And so that's always been a huge passion of mine, like listening to that kind of music. So 9 times out of 10, if I hit some sort of plot knot in a book I'm working on, if I go to my book playlist that I've built, or I just go explore new music on Spotify and I go on a walk and listen to music and let my mind wander, 9 times out of 10, that does the trick. And I'm able to untangle whatever mess I've gotten myself into. So music is a huge thing. I was listening to, when I came up with the idea for the Imperium trilogy, I was on a plane coming back from a family vacation when I was 18. I had just finished high school, and I was listening to Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, that score. The track was The End of All Things. And this big, dramatic, bombastic choral piece, you know, doom and, you know, everything's terrible. And I was looking out the window and listening to this, and I just started daydreaming, and I saw this young woman who was very sad and very angry and very powerful and very beautiful. And she just kind of appeared in my mind, and she was surrounded by a field of fire. And she was like, I don't know what she was going through. I didn't at the time, but I was like, wow, she is going through it. Who is this woman? And what is her story? And why is she sad? And what kind of power does she have? And who loves her? And who hates her? And so answering all of those questions built the character of Riel. And then the rest of the trilogy, you know, I constructed it around her story. So in that moment, it was just a random daydream listening to Lord of the Rings, as one does. And so that has been, that kind of listening to music and daydreaming has been a huge, huge part of my creative process. Whenever I go to school visits and talk to kids about my middle grade books, we practice that. So we listen to music together and we sort of write a story together collectively. Like, raise your hand and tell me what this music made you think and feel, what images popped into your head. And that's just so fun to see their eyes come alive and to see their story gears start turning, even if they don't think they like writing. Music is a way of accessing storytelling in a way that feels a little less intimidating. So, music is a huge, huge inspiration for me.
Not to be, like, cringe, but I just got chills when you were explaining, like, being on the plane, like, listening to Lord of the Rings.
That's so cool.
Like, the fire, and, like, I'm gonna go reread Fureyborn and listen to the Lord of the Rings soundtrack within the background, and I'm gonna love it so much more.
You should.
I love it a lot, but I can see it. Like, I can see that the Lord of the Rings score ties into that, because they both have those, like, epic,
yes,
like, journeys and, like, highs and lows and sweeping, like, crescendos.
Oh, yes.
But yes, that's awesome. Yeah.
I love a sweeping crescendo. I really do.
I love that, too, because I went to art school. I went to art college, and I'm a graphic designer now. But I feel like we used to always do creative activities like that, like listen to something. Mm-hmm. And how does it make you feel? And, you know, make an image out of that or whatever. And so I love that you're teaching kids to foster that kind of creativity.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And it's useful not just for kids, but for us too. You know, if...
Absolutely.
If you're, like, last year, I taught a class for grad students. And one of the things I talked about was the same thing. Like, if you get stuck, if you have writer's block and you feel like you don't know how to reorient yourself in your story world, music is a way to, again, another access point to the story you're trying to tell. Like, maybe you don't know what to write next, but maybe it's easier to spend some time listening to music and figure out what music feels right. And then that's your gateway into figuring out what comes next in the plot, or what comes next for that character, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. What sparks the...
Exactly.
What gets the juices going.
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
For any writers listening out there, there's your pro tip. Start listening to more music, some more movie scores.
If you go to my Spotify, I have playlists for each of my books, and there's really, really awesome film score music on there. It's a good starting point if you want to start exploring that genre of music more. I have a lot of great music on my profile.
Yeah, we can link out to all of your Spotify playlists in the episode description, so we can also give everyone access to that.
Fantastic.
Speaking of Fureyborn, since we were talking about Lord of the Rings, Fureyborn, my question is, how did you keep all of the timeline stuff straight?
I was also wondering this.
I tried so hard after I finished book two because of what happens at the end of that book. No spoilers. I was like going through trying to find clues of what is going on, what is happening. And then the third book came out and I was like, wow. Plot twist after plot twist. Was not expecting any of this. And it just seemed like a lot to keep track of. So I was wondering, like, how you organized yourself.
A mix of chaos and order. So lots of spreadsheets, lots of lists, and also just a lot of random documents with just word vomit, like stream of consciousness, thoughts and ideas just spewed out there. And a lot of, again, music helped me map out the plot of this book and keep things straight. You know, obviously I had notes that were a more conventional timeline, like, oh, here's the chronology. This happens on this date and this happens on this date. And how do these two storylines fit together? Let's like draw, you know, write this out visually. But also having the playlist, which developed quite a bit over the many, many years that I was working on this project, having a playlist that evolved as the story evolved and helped remind me as I was keeping all of these details and timeline straight, I could go back to a particular track that in my mind accompanied a certain scene, and it would like reground me in the emotional heart of that scene. And it'd be like, okay, yeah, that's what this scene is about. That's what's happening to this character in this scene. Sit with the music for a bit. Excuse me, reorient myself and then jump back in. That was really helpful. Also, I mean, just the sheer amount of time I spent with this series. Like, I came up with the idea when I was 18. The book didn't publish until I was 32. So that's a lot of time spent in this world. And so I think, and this isn't a very like sexy answer, because especially when I was younger, I was so impatient to get this book, to get this series written and published. And it took a much longer time than I had envisioned. But sometimes the way to really get to know a world is to spend a lot of time with it. Would it have been great if I got published immediately and became like an overnight success story? Sure. Great. Yeah, that would have been awesome. But that's not what happened. And a silver lining there is that I feel like I lived with these characters for so long and lived in this world for so long that I just came to know it in my bones. And that helped a lot in terms of keeping everything straight as I went on. So yeah, it was a mixture of things.
Yeah, I honestly can say from just like my reading experience that you can tell that a lot of time was spent. Like, all of the characters are super well developed. Like,
thank you.
There, at least from my time reading it, there weren't any obvious plot holes or like issues with the timelines. That's why I was so surprised. Like, wow, this worked out really well. Like, this, the ending was perfect, I think.
Oh, I
like,
love the ending. I really do.
Yeah, the ending was very satisfying for me, even though I spent a lot of time, like, bawling my eyes out, being like, why is this happening? And then you get to the end, and you're like, okay, I think I can live with this. This is like, the perfect amount of sad and happy, and you kind of feel satisfied. So I will say that I agree, the silver lining, like, there's a lot of love in that series.
Thank you. Yes, there is a lot of love in that series. I love all of my books, and I really love the trilogy I'm working on right now, because one of the main reasons is because each of the sisters and each of the the books in this trilogy, in the Middlemiss trilogy, focuses on a different sister, the three Ashbourne sisters. Each sister is dealing with some kind of mental health challenge or childhood trauma or body issues. And these things are discussed, frankly, on the page. And they're still, again, the heroes, and they have their happily ever afters. This series I started working on in earnest during lockdown, and it was the thing that brought me joy and was very cathartic, and I love it so, so much. I don't know that anything will ever... I don't know if I'll ever love anything as much as I love the Imperium trilogy. I think it's just because it was... I was with it. I was in it for so long. Like, math again. Hold on, let me think. Like, it's been it's been like more than half of my life now that that I've lived with this. And even though I'm not writing that series anymore, like, the characters, they're still, they still live in me. So it's really nice to hear you say that. And every time someone is like, oh, I love these books, I'm like, you know, as you said, maybe a little cringe, but like every time it's like hearing it for the first time and I get all like mushy inside.
I also really enjoyed book one of Middlemiss. I will say that. And thank you. Also, fun fact for everybody who doesn't know, each of the books is going to be based off of one of Claire's favorite ballets, correct?
Ballet? Yes, yes. It's not, they're not like direct retellings. Like, I wouldn't call them retellings, but they're definitely inspired by ballets that I love. So book one is inspired by Giselle, book two by The Firebird, and book three by Swan Lake. So if you are a fan of the ballets, cool. You'll notice some Easter eggs here and there. And that's been really fun to do. Ballet, I'm not a ballerina, I'm not a dancer, but I have always, always admired their artistry and their athleticism and the blending of movement and music, and what a beautiful art form that makes. So that's always been a huge inspiration too.
Yeah. And I will say I have three sisters, so there's four of us. So I definitely relate to the sister relationships and the bonds and the breakdowns and having that complicated history with the people that you love the most, that you just want to love you back and to be like, you're my favorite person, just accept me.
Yes.
So if you have a sister, you have a sibling, I say, these are the books for you.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot. I actually don't have sisters. I have a little brother. And the character of Remy in the Imperium trilogy was in part a tribute to him, and how close he and Eliana are and how much they love each other and how loyal they are to each other. That was in part a tribute to him. But I have a very big family with lots of cousins and aunts, and I have friends who have sisters, and I'm fascinated by stories about sisters. And so I worked really hard to create these very complex dynamics among them. And you'll see more of that in books two and three. And I love spending time with these women.
Yeah, I think you did a good job at getting the complexities of the sister bonds, where you're like, I'm just so mad at you right now, but I'm still going to protect you because you're my sister and I love you. But like,
right.
This is, why did you do this?
Oh, but, yeah.
Okay, we're going to fix it.
It's like,
I love it too, because I'm an only child, so I get to like live through them.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, I don't have sisters, and I've always kind of loved the idea of having sisters. Don't get me wrong. I love my brother and I wouldn't trade him for anything, but you know, it's just, you know, I grew up watching like Little Women and loving, that's just one example, but loving the, how much you can love someone and hate someone at the same time. And there's such a level of intimacy between sisters that just seems so special and even kind of sacred. And so I really have loved exploring that with these books.
I love that you don't have a sister, but you still understand like that. Like, yes, yes, yes to all of this.
Well, and that's part of it with these books. It's not only the dynamics among the sisters, but just the general family dynamics. There's a lot of family angst in the Middlemiss trilogy, and that continues in books two and three. And all of these women, the Ashbourne sisters, they're all dealing with varying levels of childhood trauma. And part of their journey, individually and as a collective, is to figure out how to heal from that and not let those things
not let those lingering traumas continue to hurt them forever. And I think that was a big part of what attracted me to writing this story, is the idea of exploring how family is just so complicated. And especially as you become, as you get older, I think it becomes even more complicated because you start to see your parents more as people and less as parents. Mm-hmm. And you start to see them both more critically and more compassionately. And you can look back at your childhood and see things that they did and say, oh, I don't think that was the right thing to do, but I think I understand why you did it. That kind of fucked me up, but I still love you, you know? And so it's all of these, and obviously everyone's experiences are different. And some people don't love their parents because of what happened when they were a kid. And obviously that's a whole different thing. These sisters, they definitely still love their parents, but the relationship is fraught. And I thought that was so interesting to explore. And it's different exploring that from the lens of an adult book rather than a YA book. And I just, that's one of my favorite parts of this series. Like the relationships that the sisters have with their father and their mother, who is not present. But her impact lingers, and how they work through those wounds and those traumas and learn how to look at them and accept them and move on from them without automatic forgiveness. Like, that's not what it's about, but it's about realizing, like, okay, I deserve healing from this. And so I am going to work on that, and I am going to extend grace to people who made mistakes in my past, not necessarily for them, but for me. I think that's such an interesting thing to explore. Very complicated, very difficult. Not always, it doesn't always sit comfortably, but that's true to life, you know?
And you do that really well, I feel like, in at least all of the books that I've read, because you touch on that, like, family dynamic in some way or another in Sawkill Girls, especially. And a little bit in Furyborn, especially with the end of the third book, without giving, again, spoilers. There is kind of, like, that resolution, but then you also wonder, like, what kind of impact is this going to leave on the characters as they get older, because we've kind of already seen what happens to them at some point. So now how's that going to change? So I definitely do love that about your books, that they always feel kind of uncomfortably real and not necessarily like, oh, we're in a fantasy world, so everything is just perfect and wrapped up nicely. Like, there's still those things that need to be dealt with and are unresolved that you can kind of think about on your own.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I love reading books where everything is tied up neatly and I finish the book and I feel like, oh, that's nice. Like, I like books like that. Yeah. I just don't really write them. So nothing against those kinds of books. They're wonderful. I love, especially after reading like something really dark or challenging, I love reading those kinds of books as a palate cleanser and like a soul restorer. But yeah, these, even Middle Mist, which has Happily Ever Afters, there's, you know, there's still things that are going to sit uncomfortably, but I like writing
them. I still think about the end of Furyborn or the end of Kingsmane, and it's been years. So if that's testament for everybody.
I had been planning the ending of Kingsmane for years. And when I finally wrote it, knowing that people were actually going to read it, like, dream come true. And then as I started getting people's reactions, I was like, oh, they're in pain. I shouldn't living. Like this. But but yes, it was very rewarding. Very fun.
Was it hard to switch after being in the Imperium series for so long? Was it difficult to switch? Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I felt extremely depressed, like, after Lightbringer came out. Granted, this was also during lockdown, and I was having the worst mental health of my life. So
compounded, yeah.
But it was, like, it was a loss, because Lightbringer was out, Lightbringer was done. I had to say goodbye to these characters, maybe not forever, but certainly at that point. And it felt like I was grieving. Like this thing that I've been working toward my entire creative life, it was done now. Now what? You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, I could feel it. I could feel the goodbye. Oh, it was terrible.
I'm sorry, let's switch.
No, it's okay. it's a great question. And I think that's just a sign of how much I loved and still love that story and those characters. You know, I think it's a good thing. It's a good kind of pain. You know, like when you finish a really good book and you're like, I can't believe this is done. What am I supposed to do with myself now? It's that, yeah. It's mm-hmm. that kind of pain, the bittersweet pain. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about, cause this is my own selfish question. Have you ever thought about going back to the Imperium series? Like, will there be more Simon? I don't know.
I saw that question.
Dev conducted this interview just to ask this question.
I saw that question in the episode notes and I was like, uh-huh. I get that question a lot. So in all seriousness, right now there are no plans, but I want there to be plans. So I want to do it Star Wars style. So I want to go back and do prequels about the Saints. Mm-hmm. And you would see also like Corian and Ludivine as their angelic selves during the angelic wars, you know, the humans versus the angels. Mm-hmm. And then I want to go forward and do sequels after the original trilogy. Spoilers, I guess, but I just won't name names, featuring characters yeah. that mm-hmm. were in the original trilogy now moving on with their story after the events of the original trilogy. Yeah.
If there's a petition that I need to sign to make that happen.
I know, like, I'm so excited. This sounds great.
We'll start the petition if we have to. I'll make it happen.
Well, you know, there was discussion of it as Lightbringer was about to come out, but I was so unhealthy, like mentally. It just mm-hmm. was not the right time. I loved that series and those characters too much to delve back into that huge world when I really didn't feel like I was capable of it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now that I'm healthier and getting back into the swing of things publishing wise, like my fingers are crossed and I want to make that happen somehow. The more you talk about Imperium online and buy copies, the likelier it is that it'll happen.
We're on it.
Yeah, but I'll just round up all of my posts of like, read this series.
Well, it's really cool hearing you ask about that, and I definitely have many ideas for more stories in that universe, so we'll just see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we have a running joke. Me and Loretta are always like, okay, now how do we get this to, like, Hulu? Or then, like, how do we get this to be live
action? We just need to
now?
Start our own production company, and we'll just make adaptations of everything we love.
Wouldn't that be so fun? Oh my gosh. Those books, though, Imperium, that would be so expensive to make. Like, it's going to have to sell, like, millions more copies before any studio is going to be like, yes, we'll spend the money on that. Because, like, thinking about all the elemental trials in book one mm-hmm. and just like all like Imperium vision, you know, when you go in Riel's head and you like see uh-huh. what she sees and all the battles and everything. Oh my God. I can just imagine studio executives like having to get on a fainting couch,
it would
you know?
So cool though. Oh my God. All right. That's our goal. Anyone listening, we need to sell millions more of this series.
If we're all together, they can't stop us.
I like this plan. I like this plan.
I have I guess it's a weirder question, but if you could pick, knowing that all of your characters are kind of, or some of them, mm-hmm. unlikable, kind of weird, mm-hmm. kind of sassy, uh-huh. quirky, but which characters from each of your series do you think would be friends and or mortal enemies? Like, who would hate each
crossovers.
Other and who would, like, want to be together all the time?
Okay, so I love this. So I have a lot of people I think would be friends. Fewer people I think would be mortal enemies. But I have a lot of people I think could be friends. So, like, Gemma and Riel, they are both messy bitches. I think they would...
Yeah.
they would love hanging out, and like everyone around them would be like, oh shit, like batten down the hatches, like Riel and Gemma are here.
Throwing a party together.
But, yeah, wearing fancy dresses.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in all, and I think they both are dealing with such different kinds of inner pain, like in all seriousness, I think that they would really, like, once they had a few glasses of wine and some cake and they're like lounging in their dresses, they would start to talk, they would get real, and I think they would really understand each other in a lot of ways. Very different kinds of pain, like I said, but still those feelings of isolation and loneliness and not being accepted for who they are. And feeling like they have to be a different person to others than they are in the inside. I feel like they would relate to each other a lot in that way. So I think Audric from the Imperium trilogy and Gareth from the Middlemist trilogy would be best buds because they are both super nerdy. They get excited about obscure academic topics and then they start going on and on about them and everyone around them is like, oh my God, please stop. Just please stop. But they're both very sweet. And I think Gareth is a bit more outgoing, a bit more confident than Audric. And so I think he would be like, he would give Audric so many affirmations, like, no, Audric, you're fucking great, man. Like, let's go to the library, you know? and then Audric would, Gareth has some issues that we will get into in later books in the Middlemist trilogy, but Audric, I think, would be a good steadying influence on him. Be like, bro, no. Like, let's sit and have a drink and let me tell you how much I love you and how much what you were doing is shitty. You know, so like they would be, yeah. I think they'd be a really good influence on each other. People who would not get along. So, you know how Corian in the Imperium trilogy, he's like very charismatic. Mm-hmm. He's seductive. He's powerful. He's hot. Like, he's also a freaking abuser. We don't like him. He's evil. Okay, he's the villain. But he is very magnetic. Uh-huh. And I can see how Gemma might be taken in by him a little bit, much as Riel was. Mm-hmm. Somebody who I think would call bullshit on absolutely everything that he says is Farron from the Middlemist trilogy. She mm-hmm. is no nonsense.
I can see this.
Yeah, she is like, she is tired. She's like, I'm too tired for this. Like, whatever you're doing, I just don't have time for it.
Yeah, just be straight with me.
Yeah. So I think she would just be absolutely, she would call him on his nonsense and be like, Gemma, come away from the hot man with the pretty eyes. Like, you have your own hot man who is not.
Look at me.
Yeah, like, right here. So, yeah, I think Corian would be successful at reeling in lots of different kinds of characters that I've written. But Farron would be like, nope, don't have time for this nonsense. Yeah. Like, you're full of
She's
it.
She's like,
yeah.
I'm going to put this plan to stop.
That checks out. Yeah.
I have other stuff to do, and it's not
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I have a list, like, I got 99 problems, and you ain't one. You know, like, no. So I could go on and on. I have more written down, but I should stop with that question. But those are three that I, those are three friendships / mortal enemy ships that I think would happen.
Yeah, those are some solid ones. I could see all of them.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I especially really love like Audric and Gareth being like nerd bros. Like
You painted such a great picture. Yeah. And I need a fanfic or something.
It's like it's the two golden retriever boyfriends, but on opposite extremes. You have like the one who's like, I'm outgoing, let's go do everything. Uh-huh. And the one who's like, I'm going to sit here and just.
Yeah. Like the one, like one of them is, yeah, like outgoing, let's go play ball. Like, and let's do this and let's do that. And the other golden retriever is like Shadow from Homeward Bound. And he's like sitting there. He's like noble and majestic, and he is like,
oh my God, what? so true.
And he's like, you know, oh, you know, mm-hmm. you rambunctious pup, you, like, let's calm down a little bit. You know, that's Audric. He's an yep. old soul. Yeah.
And now I'm just envisioning them on, like, practicing with their swords, and then they're uh-huh. in their little field, and uh-huh. Audric's just standing there with his big old sword. Uh-huh. Gareth is, like, going all crazy.
Yeah, Gareth. Because that's where they differ, right? Like, Audric is, he's a swordsman. Like, he knows how to mm-hmm. use, oh my gosh, what's the name of it? Oh my gosh, Illuminor is the name of his sword. like, he is a warrior king, and Gareth is like, mm-hmm. oh, I like partying and books. Like, I don't know how to do this.
Cool sword, bro.
Yeah, like, he would be like, so wait, how does this work? It harnesses sunlight? Like, let's put this yeah. under a microscope or whatever the Middlemist like, equivalent
I read about
is.
This. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. The bromance we didn't know we needed until now.
If there's a fan fiction story that ends up online, we won't be sad about it.
No, send and it can it doesn't need to have a plot. It can just be them sitting around
oh yeah
being dorks together. Like, I that's all
the
I want
fluff, yeah
yeah.
So to round out our book questions,
yes.
we are wondering if you can give the listeners an update on what you're working on next, and on top of that, can we get a teaser, an exclusive quote? What can you share? If you can't share, that's okay, but we would like to ask.
Well, what I am working on next, besides books 2 and 3 of the Middlemist trilogy, which are so fun, I'm editing book 2 right now, and that's Farron's book. I am working on an adult horror. It's a weird, like, horror fantasy thriller.
I'm ready for this already.
Yeah, I mean, me too. If somebody said that to me, I'd be like, whatever it is, I want it. Like, that's...
Yes.
I'm in,
yeah. It's a stand...
You don't have to tell me anything yeah. else. I'm gonna read it.
It's a standalone, which is fun, after working on 2 big fantasy series. Like, I love standalones. I love reading them. I love writing them. And it's about... It's about really complicated friendships... first love, there's some weird cosmic horror culty shit, and then there's one of the big thematic explorations is, like, how far people will go to secure power. It is really, really fun. I'm in the very nascent stages of, like, word vomiting all my thoughts into various, like, spreadsheets and documents. I'm calling it, like, on Instagram, I'll be referring to it as Bane Barter Blood. I think that's what I called it. Because I've already used the hashtag a couple of times on Instagram. I'm pretty sure that's what I called it, Bane Barter Blood. That's, like, the code name or whatever. It's really, really fun. It's more firmly adult than Middlemist is in terms of just, like, I guess just the themes I'm exploring and the gore and just, like, the darkness, like, the sort of bleakness of it all. Not necessarily happily ever after. This is not a romance, you know? So it's more along the lines of, like, Saw Kill and Extasia in terms mm-hmm. of what the vibe is, but just adult rather than YA. So I'm very excited about it.
And, I'm excited about this already.
Yeah.
I will be on the lookout for more information.
I'm very excited. And then I was thinking what I would do is read, like, the first few lines of book 2 of the Middlemist trilogy.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. Yay.
Just, like, a very short thing. I'm not going to read yes. for too long. But this is Farron's book, like I said. I'm editing it right now, so it's possible that the excerpts you're about to hear will be different by the time the book comes out. But I really, really love the first chapter, and I'm just going to read, like, the first little bit of it. Okay?
Okay, we're ready.
Okay, let me get to it.
For anybody listening, if you don't want any spoilers or don't want teasers, this is the place to skip over.
Yes, excellent. And it won't be very long. Okay, so here we go. Farron opened her eyes to a strange world full of smoke. She didn't recognize the walls around her, or the ceiling above her, and she didn't understand why the air was so dark, so choked and acrid. For a moment, she lay there frozen in her cocoon of quilts. Yes, these were quilts around her, the ones from her bed, one white with tiny green leaves, one a soft gray like morning and winter, both sewn with her mother's embroidery. And she thought to herself, as she often did when waking from a nightmare, "My name is Farron Ashbourne. I am 11 years old. I am safe at home at Ivy Hill. My sisters are Mara and Gemma. My parents are Gideon and Philippa. My name is Farron Ashbourne." So that's just the beginning of the prologue.
So good.
Little baby Farron. So I am very, very excited about this book. I can't wait to share it with everybody. I love the title. I can't wait to share the title. I can't wait to see what my publisher, Source Books, is going to do with the cover. And
the cover of book one is honestly like one of my favorite
things. I love it.
It's so
yeah.
It's so pretty. I love the like rich turquoise, like the rich dark green blue mm-hmm. of it all. I can't wait to see if they go with like more rich jewel tones for books two and three. Yeah, very excited.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait. Okay, we have some other quick questions. I think we can just do like rapid fire because yes. they're all kind of similar to each other, but they're more, you mentioned loving like movie music and scores, mm-hmm. And you were a trumpet player. So some uh-huh. of our other questions just to get people, you know, more in the know about who Claire is mm-hmm. are, who are some of your favorite authors? Mm-hmm. Who are some of your favorite musical artists mm-hmm. or shows? What do you do when you're not writing? So some of your favorite hobbies. Mm-hmm. So just we'll let you go and talk about like everything you like to do when you are not writing.
Okay. And I will try to do this quickly and not go on and on for ages. So some of my favorite authors. I love Kristen Kishore. She is perhaps my favorite fantasy author ever. If you haven't read her books, Graceling, Fire, Bitter Blue, yeah, Winterkeep, they're right back here behind me. I was like, wait, I blanked. Winterkeep and Sea Sparrow, they're just fantastic books centering these amazing, complex women. And the writing is beautiful. The world is thoughtfully constructed. The relationships are messy. I love her books so much. I also really love Frances Hardinge. That's Hardinge. She's an English author who writes like really weird fantasy horror stuff. And it sort of straddles that weird age category line. It's like some of her stuff is kind of middle grade leaning to YA and some of it is solidly YA and some of it feels YA leaning into adult. It's just like this really hard to categorize, beautifully written, really weird stuff. Fantasy horror
stuff. I'm
looking
at her stuff right now because it sounds like part of my
own. Yeah, this sounds amazing. So good. I think my favorite of hers so far is Cuckoo Song. And it's really, really creepy. It's about sisters. And then I also loved The Lie Tree. Her writing is just exquisite and it's weird and dark. Perfect like fall reads because they're so moody yeah. and her settings are beautifully drawn. The characters are prickly and odd, and it's just fantastic. So those are two of my favorite authors. Favorite music. So one of my favorite artists, and this is not film music for once, but her name is Agnes. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's Agnes. And then her last name is Obel, Obel. She is a Scandinavian singer-songwriter. Her music is so weird, but still accessible. It's like the vibe is very like ethereal moon witch meets earthy like moss witch. So it's
I'm all over this. Yeah.
It's really, really good accompaniment to reading or writing fantasy. Her voice is so pretty. Her instrumentation is usually very orchestral, very cinematic. She also has some songs that are just instrumental where she's playing the piano or, you know, something very simple like that. She is one of my favorite musical artists. I think she is highly underrated. I want her to come tour in the US so that I can see her. highly recommend checking her out. I think I have a playlist on Spotify that's just her instrumental stuff too, if you wanted to check that out as well. Oh, what do I do when I'm not writing? Okay, so I love playing cozy games on my Nintendo Switch. So
we're here for this.
You're talking to the right people.
So I feel like I'm fairly new to this. So recommendations, like if anyone has them for me, like send them to me. So I like playing the old Spyro games, like Spyro the Dragon. So I love replaying those. I have been introduced to Stardew Valley. It's super cute. I love that. I'm playing Super Mario Brothers, some kind of Super Mario Brothers game right now. And it's just like the graphics are so cozy. And I just love the cozy gaming vibe. It really relaxes me. So I love doing that. I have a lot of plants. I'm a plant mom, so I love taking care of my plants. I also am a huge baseball fan. So right now, my team is the Phillies. I grew up in Texas. I love the Rangers, and I'll always love the Rangers. But I moved up north, and last year I discovered the Phillies, and I love them so much. I talked about this on Instagram, so forgive me for repeating myself, but like they are so weird. They're like a scrappy island of misfit toys in the form of a baseball team. And so many of them have truly glorious hair. Like I just love them. And so we're getting into almost playoff season now, so it's like all baseball all the time in this house right now. There's actually, the game is on mute in the living room right now, and the Phillies are winning. So
yeah. Who would have thought fantasy and baseball, like, I mean, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, my family, you know, they took me to baseball games when I was a kid, and my brother played baseball, so it's just always been, pardon me, a part of my life. So cozy gaming, plants, baseball. Also very excited for the new season of the Great British Bake Off to start next week. Very excited.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Great British Bake Off too. Sometimes I put it on in the background just to rewatch everything that they make.
Oh yeah.
Like, well, I wish I could eat that right now.
Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to eat that right now. Some of those desserts are a little bit weird for me, but a lot of them look really delicious. I'm sorry, Loretta.
Respect, you can make it, but
yeah.
No, I was going to ask if you have heard of the Savannah Bananas, because I went to school. Yeah, I went to school, and they used to be the Savannah Sand Gnats.
Oh my gosh.
The news held, like, someone bought them, and then they held a contest, like, what should we name our baseball team? And Bananas won. And my mom and I were like, this is the stupidest name for a baseball team I've ever heard. And now they have, like, millions of followers on TikTok, and they're huge thing, and they're amazing.
They're fantastic. I just learned about them somewhat recently, actually, from my stepsister. She was like, we were talking about baseball. We went to see a Rangers game, I think. This was when I went home to visit. We went to a Rangers game, and she was like, have you heard of the Savannah Bananas? And I was like, the what? You know, like, that sounds like complete nonsense out of context.
Crazy. Yeah.
And then she showed me their TikTok, and I was like, this is one of the best things I've ever seen. So for those of you who don't know,
weird. It's
they're like a trick stunt baseball team, and they like dance and put on skits and do like little stunts.
They're minor leagues, and they do like, they just don't care, and they just dance,
they have a good
time. Yeah.
So
they lean into the TikTok sounds, the TikTok dances,
Like if something goes viral, like if a dance goes viral on TikTok, like they're gonna recreate it as one of their like walk up songs.
Absolutely,
So they're fantastic. Highly recommend checking them out.
That I feel like is you're a very well rounded person. Like fantasy books, horror, cozy switch games, baseball. Like, it's very...
I mean, we all have layers, right? We contain multitudes.
Onions.
Yes. And in all seriousness, that's something I tell, again, something I tell kids when I go to schools. And they're like, how do you find your inspiration? And the answer is multifaceted, of course. And we've already talked about music. But part of it is just, like, exploring and learning about lots of different things. Right? Because if you pay attention to what's around you and like listen to what other people are talking about, what other people are interested in, and are constantly exploring and observing, whether it's like going to a museum or it's just walking down the street and paying attention to what you see and what the air feels like against your skin and what people are talking about and how your body feels in the world. Like all of those little tiny things that we kind of take for granted, if you're constantly paying attention to those things, you can really find inspiration anywhere. And so that's one of the things, again, I like to do if I have writer's block, is to go on a walk. Like go on a walk, go out in the world, go on a drive, listen to music, just like remind myself that I don't just exist at my computer trying to write a book. I exist as part of this great, messy, frustrating, beautiful world, right? And inspiration is everywhere. Even, you know, I'm watching the Phillies and like, okay, let's talk for a second about Bryce Harper. So Bryce Harper is on the Phillies and he is extremely talented and extremely handsome. And he has like this, well, he did have this great big voluminous beard and he just shaved it off and he needs to grow it back because he looks better with the beard.
It's but not like, the same.
It's just not the same. The vibes are very like if he were an animal, he would be like a lion with like a big Mufasa mane, uh-huh. You know?
Yes.
And so, you know, whenever I watch him, I'm like, I love his energy. He's so intense and he's very competitive and his eyes are like, you know, like laser beams. And I'm like, I feel like I need to put Bryce Harper in a book someday. You know, so even when you watch baseball, you see people who are interesting or who have really good beards or just like you like the dynamics of the team. Or maybe you see a dessert on the Great British Baking Show that like looks like something beautiful they would eat in a fantasy novel. And it makes you think about this fantasy world in which maybe there's like a kitchen witch who bakes beautiful, uh-huh. You know, confections. And so anyway, there's inspiration everywhere.
I'll be on the lookout for the dedication.
I was just going to say.
to the baseball team. And also for the next story that the main character is a kitchen witch who seduces people with her cakes.
With her cakes. I mean, right. I would read that. But
I was going to say, I'm going to be on the lookout for guessing which character is Bryce now.
There you go. But see, that's the thing. Like, we're laughing and it is funny because like, I can't believe I just talked about Bryce Harper on this podcast, but the thing is like, again, when I talk to kids, especially, they're like, what's a piece of advice you have if you want to be a writer? And you gotta read a lot and you gotta read widely because there's something to learn even from genres that aren't really the thing that you write at all. There's still things to learn about storytelling. And if you're writing, I'm sorry, if you're watching some random cooking show, you never know when something in that show might inspire a story idea or a character. And so
yeah. The
important thing is just to keep your eyes and your mind and your spirit open to the inspiration that literally exists everywhere.
Yeah. I think that that's just good advice for kids who are growing into themselves too, because mm-hmm. when you're young, at least for me, when you're young, you're trying to fit in and you're like, I can't like the things that I like because nobody else does. Or like, I have to like what these other people like. But mm-hmm. when you hear somebody telling you like, no, just like everything, just go and be interested in anything you want to be interested in that, like, you know, that suits your fancy. Yeah. Like just, you know, and be unapologetically you.
Yes.
And find inspiration in, like, the small things. Like, I think that goes a long way when it comes to anybody, but kids especially.
Yeah, I was going to say kids especially, but even adults, you know, I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in our own stuff and our busy work lives and our social media metrics and on and on mm-hmm. and on that we forget to take a breath and look around us for inspiration and reminders of, like, why we love what we love in the first place, whether that's storytelling or cozy gaming or baseball or whatever. You know, there's so much restorative energy and inspiration to be found in making sure that you're still spending time doing the things that you love besides your work and that you're always exploring new things. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm talking way too much. This is going on for so long. I mean, I'm having a great time, but
we're down to our little mini. I guess we have a mini game.
Yeah.
But I will let Loretta jump in and explain kind of like what we like to do when we do interviews.
Yeah, when we do interviews, we like to ask authors to take some of their favorite characters and find out what they'd be doing in real life. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's a few characters that you would prefer to talk about, but like, what would they be doing for a job, or what would they be listening to or watching, or
who's into baseball and who's into the Great British Bake Off?
Okay, so Audric is a super fan of the Great British Bake Off, right? And so
I can see that.
He just loves it so much, and he's taking notes like, oh, I'm going to try to make that for Riel, because that's how he is. I can just see him, like, you know, he's got papers, like, piling up on his desk, and his advisors are like, where the hell is this kid? Not kid. He's an adult, but, you know, I still think of him as, well, pause. So, not pause the recording, just, like,
yeah.
Side note. The original version of Furyborn had, in the first book, Audric, Riel, and Ludivine were all kids. And then there was a time jump from book one to book two, and then they were the age that they are currently in the series. Mm-hmm. So because that was the first version of them, I still think of Audric a little kid. So anyway, baby Audric. So anyway, he would watch the Great British Bake Off. I like to think that if he and Simon ever hung out, he would try to convert Simon to the Great British Bake Off fan club. And Simon would be so resistant, but like, and he'd be like, I'll sit here, but I'm going to like clean my guns while you watch this show. But then he would start to get into it.
And yeah, he would secretly love it.
He would start to get invested, and like, I think Audric would find out that he was invested when, like, someone's cake fell over one day, and Simon would be like, no, you know?
I was going to say, like, Audric is in the kitchen baking, and then Simon offhandedly says, like, you're not supposed to use the baking soda, and he's like, why do you know that?
Exactly. I wrote down a couple of things. Let me go to... Oh, yeah, so... I wrote down some TV shows that I think they would like. So I think Gemma would like anything that was like delicious, gossipy, like palace intrigues, family drama. So I think she would like Succession. I think she would like Bridgerton, which is one of the like comp titles that we used for this trilogy. I think she would like Gossip Girl. She would want to watch anything that just felt delicious and soapy and like, just scrumptious drama, right?
Would she be a reality TV girl?
I was just gonna say, yeah.
Oh, The Real Housewives. She would definitely watch that, and I think she would get Riel into it as well. Eliana. If I could reach into the books and grab out. Grab a single character and bring them out and like take care of them for a day, it would be Eliana, because she goes through it in these books, and I would want to just like take her to a spa day and wrap her in a blanket, like one of those little bats that like you wrap up in a blanket, like a little burrito, and like give her some soup and like comb her hair and be like, it's gonna be okay, you know. So I would want to give her a spa day. But I think if she were gonna watch, If she lived in our world and she were watching TV shows, she would be kind of masochistic in her choices. So, like, she has a hard life, right? But she would want to watch the hard stuff, like hard, gritty drama. So she would want to watch, like, Ozark, and she would want to watch Breaking Bad, and she would want to watch, like, gritty sci-fi, like Battlestar Galactica. And, like, you know, Remy would walk in and he'd be like, why are you watching this? Like... this is so dark. Like, how are you not depressed all the time? And she'd be like, it feels good to be sad. You know, like, she would, like, she'd, like, this is, she'd be like, this is what I need to work out. You know, it'd be cathartic for her, because her own mind and her own experience and her own life is so dark and fraught. I think she would want to watch dark, fraught things as, like, a sort of...
release, or
like an exorcism of the darkness she carries. Those are some
and
of the things.
And then she invites everybody over and she's like, do you want to watch my favorite show?
And they're like, yeah, sure.
And she turns She turns it on and it's, they're like, what?
And they're like, okay.
Yeah, they're like, they think it's going to be like a fun, like, you know, let's come over and have summer a movie party. Night. And they like bring snacks. And then Eliana is like, here's like Ingmar Bergman film, you know, like, supper with me. And Simon would be like, yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm into this.
Like, I'm so into this. This is better than the Great British Bake Off.
And Audric would be like, how dare?
How dare you?
So, yes, that's, this is, again, if I ever stumbled upon, which I don't really go look for fan, I used to read a lot of fan fiction. I don't really anymore. But if anyone ever sent me a fic of, like, my characters, like, crossover, you know, different books just sitting around, like, having a movie night, I would be in heaven. Like, that would be fantastic. Like, I need to see this happen.
I honestly do, too. So if anybody wants to write that fanfic for us, please.
Yeah, send it our way.
Like, I need to see Gemma and Riel being, like, messy bitches while they watch Real Housewives and, like, trying to, like, catch everyone up on the tea of the show. And Audric is like, uh-huh, like, earnestly trying. He's taking notes, like, okay. Like, yeah, I love them so much. I love all of them. Yep.
And then Simon is like, they make it so easy for them to track. Like, yeah, what? I already know where they are right now.
Yeah, he's like, I really like, need to contact the producers, them. Like, and make sure that they know that this is a security risk. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
that was very fun. I am so glad that you agreed to be on the show with us.
I know, we I'm so excited you're time. Here.
Yeah, this was so much fun. Like, I felt like I was hanging out with friends and just talking about books, which is one of my favorite things to do. So thank you so yes. much for having me on. This is so fun.
This was honestly one of my bucket list items for our podcast. Oh. I was like, we need to have Claire on the show. I love her so much.
Dream
so,
item, yeah.
Yes.
I'm so glad it worked out. This was honestly a dream for me too. It's so fun to talk to people who are so passionate about books and reading and who like my books in particular. That's always a gift. That's always such a compliment. So thank you.
Yes, no problem. And we will also share all of your social links and your book links, Spotify playlist. Mm-hmm. So everybody listening, that'll be in our description. And you can follow Claire on Instagram. I think it's just Claire the Grand Books
yes, on Instagram. Yes, I'm back on Instagram after like 3 years. So
yes,
you can follow me on Instagram at Claire the Grand Books. I'm also, I have a newsletter that you can subscribe to via my website. And my newsletter subscribers will always be the first to learn about like exciting announcements and things. So
I can attest to
that. So yeah, that's where you can find me online.
Yeah, and you can find us at Emo Girls Guide everywhere. When Claire's new books come out, we'll probably be reading them one fable for our book club, so keep an eye out on that. And we always like to end and say, may everyone's day be blessed with main character energy. So everyone,
love it.
Have a great main character energy filled day.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much.
Bye, thank you.
Bye, thank you so much.